We're continuing in our discussion in Parshat Vayishev. This year is sort of bridging a topic that comes up all throughout Vayishev and goes into Miketz. That's certainly relevant to both, but again, we're sort of shifting through the Yosef story. Last time we talked about the Ma'alot of Yehuda and the Ma'alot of the Baal Tshuva over the Tzaddik, and I said that this time we're going to focus on an aspect that's unique to the Tzaddik, and he who embodies the Tzaddik, who is Yosef. What is one of the defining elements that consistently shows itself throughout the story of Yosef? I think you said that last time also, and it's still true. But in addition to his emuna, it literally shows up in the story time and again and again. In 6 weeks, I leave campus, and that's it, and I'm going to Israel. And you've got this last opportunity to know that the primary first question in Shir is always going to be the title on the source sheet in front of you. What is one of the main elements that constantly shows up in the story of Yosef? Dreams, right? That's not far out. We know that. When they made a play about it, they called it Yosef and His Technicolor Dream Coat, even though you can't have a dream coat. That's not a thing. That's definitely not what Ketoret Pasim means. The word dream isn't in there. But dreams are so central to the story, they had to sneak it into the title. Right? Dreams are part and parcel of the whole story, the whole narrative of Yosef, from the beginning and all the way till the end. Where at the beginning? In what way does it start off the story of Yosef? Exactly, he has the dreams of what's going to happen in the future, of the brothers bowing down to him, and that is what instigates and pushes that hatred and jealousy to the forefront, to the point where they're willing to throw him into the pit and then eventually sell him down to Mitzrayim. They continue to guide Yosef's journey, that when he gets to jail, he interprets the dreams of the cupbearer and the baker, which eventually gets him into the mind, 2 years later, of the cupbearer when he's before Paro. And what happens then? Who has dreams? Which is the beginning of Parshat Miketz. Paro himself has dreams. And once again, Yosef's life takes a turn as he interprets the dreams of Paro. And that is actually the turning point that brings him up, that raises him up to being Mishneh LeMelech, to being second to the king, to rise into prominence in Egypt, which is how the brothers are going to come and end up bowing down to fulfillment of the first dream itself. So dreams are a key point in the through line of the story of Yosef, so much that they become part of his very identity. When the brothers stand in Shechem and see Yosef coming towards them, how do the brothers refer to Yosef? Say again. They call him the dreamer. In Hebrew, once again, take a look at your source sheet, source number one. They literally call him the dreamer. It's a pasuk. Perek Lamed Zayin Pasuk Yotet Vayamru Isha Lachiv. They each said to each other, Hinei Baal HaChalomot HaLazeh Ba. Baal HaChalomot, literally the dreamer. Yeah, that they got right. That they got right in the play, right? The dreamer is coming. But the Torah utilizes those words in order to show us that that's part of his very identity. And they're not the only ones to basically call him the dreamer. Who else gives a name to Yosef? Paro, excellent. Paro in the next source, in the next pasuk from Parshat Miketz, Perek Mem Aleph Pasuk Mem Hei, Vayikra Paro Shem Yosef Sofnat Haneach, which obviously means the dreamer. Or not. Do we know what Sofnat Haneach means? Let's unpack it. Mazet Safun. Where do we see Safun? What did you say? The south, good, what else? In the Seder, right? In the Seder, what do we have in the Seder? We have Safun, which is when we go find the, which is, what if you go and find it? Where is it? It's hidden. It's that which is hidden. So too, the area directionally, in the way that Torah understands the way that north is situated, meaning just in terms of how you organize the compass, right, is that the north is the direction where the sun rests when it's hidden, when it's on the dark side of the earth. That's north. Therefore, it's called Tzafon. So, Sofnat Paneach, Safun there is that which is hidden. Maza lefaneach. It means to decipher. So, what?
Where do you see that word in other places?
I mean, it's certainly used that way in modern Hebrew. I'm trying to think if there's any other Torah context for that being that. I mean, that is what it means. I don't know. I have to double check. But that is what paneach means. So if not paneach means he who deciphers the hidden, meaning he who interprets the dreams. There are a through line in his life. It's how the brothers refer to him. It's the name that Paro gives him. Clearly, names are central to the character and the identity of Yosef. Last time, we discussed how what's being set up in Parshat Vayeshev is these two parallel lines of kingship and these two contrasting lines of kingship. We have the kingship of Yosef, and we also have the kingship of Yehuda, which expresses itself in David HaMelech, right? So we know that Yosef is connected to dreams. What do we know about the relationship between Yehuda, or more specifically David, the relationship between David HaMelech and sleep?
At the end of his life, did he not sleep because he was worried about the bomb?
True, but he didn't have to wait till the end of his life. At the end of the, there is a story there. At the end of his life, he didn't want to detach from closest to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in his mind and learning Torah, and that it required him to break off from the Makor HaChayim, from the source of life, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in order for him to die. And so finally, the Malach HaMavet makes a sound outside and is distracted for a second, and that's the moment that he dies. So, true. But his whole life, he doesn't sleep. Take a look in the Gemara Brachot in source number 3. Amar of Ushaya, Amar of Acha, Hachi ka Amar, Mi olam lo avar alai chatzot laila b'sheina. I never passed over chatzot halaila having slept. Even more than that, and this is the point that we're honing in on, not just chatzot halaila, Rabbi Zera Omar, ad chatzot halaila. So yes, he would sleep until chatzot halaila, but he wouldn't really sleep, says Rabbi Zera. Ad chatzot halaila mit natnim kesus. I don't know. I don't understand the deep meaning of why it's relating to a sus. I also nod off sometimes, but name means to nod off. Right? About what you did last period in class. Right? It means to nod off, but never actually to allow oneself to fall into real sleep. So David HaMelech never slept. He never dreamt. There was no connection between David HaMelech and dreams. And then it says, Mikan ve'elachai mekaber. He was a very powerful person. He would nod off until Chatzot. Chatzot would come. He would jump up, and then he would already be serving Kadosh Baruch Hu like a lion from Chatzot on. That was David HaMelech's life. But David HaMelech, again, doesn't sleep and doesn't have any relationship to dreams. My Rebbe quotes, he didn't quote from where the source was, but he says that there are deeper sources that say that David HaMelech, explicitly, that he never dreamt or that he never had a good dream in his life. I don't know exactly what sefer he was referring to when he quoted that. Or he quoted that in when he gave over the shiur as well. Either way, what comes out is that dreams are very much Yosef's, in Yosef's realm, and they don't seem to be in the context of David HaMelech and the realm of Yehuda's kingship. There seems to be a distance between sleep and therefore dreaming as well. So how do we understand the fact that Yosef is the dreamer? Well, Yosef and David are not. Why does the tzaddik dream and the Baal Tshuva not dream? What do these two things have to do with each other? So let's go deeper. We're going to go a little far out. You ready? Good? You all look as tired as I feel. You okay? Ready to go? Okay. We're going to try to get as deeply into this topic as we can in the time that we have. What is the consciousness of a dream? So let's start with the consciousness that we're familiar with, our awake consciousness, our regular daily awake consciousness. In Lashon HaKodesh in Hebrew, what we would call our normal, regular, awake, daily consciousness, the term that we could attribute to that is da'at. Da'at is my conscious relationship to the world. We've talked about in the past what da'at means. Da'at means literally to connect. My way of connecting with reality is through da'at. that you have three levels of knowledge. There's Chochma, Bina, and Da'at. Remember, we've talked about these in the past. Chochma is what you all are doing right now. You're just hearing the information and taking it in. When you leave, as your mind is going wild over the incredible Torahs that my Rebbe shared with you through me, right? You'll be processing it and going through the process of Bina, Lahavin davar mitoch davar, to try to figure out how it all fits into each other, to process it, to create a binyan with your bina, to create a structure out of that knowledge. And then eventually, once you fully process that knowledge and made it a part of yourself, that's da'at. Da'at is to be fully connected with something. That's why when we've done this in the past, we've quoted the pasuk from the beginning of Bereshit, Ha'adam yada et chava ishto, that after they leave Gan Eden, that Adam knew Chava. What does that mean? They had a physical relationship between this kind and heaven. Meaning they bonded fully, the two became one. Da'at on the realm of knowledge means when the knowledge and myself become one. Okay? My da'at, my connection to the reality right in front of me, my daily consciousness that connects me to reality, that's da'at. That's my regular, awake, daily consciousness is my da'at. So da'at is the word that we're going to use to define our conscious connection to reality. Dreaming is connecting to reality on a totally different plane. Let's open this up a little bit. In time, we have different relationships to time. We have Avar, Oved, and Atid. Right? We have past, present, and future. Past, present, and future. Where does our da'at, where does our regular, daily, conscious, awake consciousness, where does that live? In which realm? In the Avar, the Hoveh, and the Atid?
Hoveh 3.
Where?
All 3.
Our regular, normal, daily, awake consciousness?
Hoveh.
It lives in the Hoveh, it has to live in the Hoveh. I mean, I don't know where you are, and that's great. And we'll talk about how Tzidkim and Tzidkaniyot live in a different realm where they may encompass all three. Maybe that's where you're living right now. You just outed yourself. But for the rest of us who are living with regular da'at, right, our experience of life is a da'at-oriented existence. Again, that's how we connect with reality. It's how we connect with the present, the moment that we're living in. Right? That's all Hoveh. Our normal, daily, awake consciousness is linked into the Hoveh, is linked into the present. It's completely involved in relating to the very thin slice of time that I'm involved in right now. If this is what you're referring to, it's true. We can remember the past. We can have vivid memories of the past. We have no experience of the future. We can anticipate the future. We can hypothesize about the future. We can think about the future. But while we can remember the past and we can anticipate the future, we can only experience the present, the thin slice of the present. We only consciously experience the present. Consciousness is inexorably linked with the present. Consciousness itself, it's literally like it slices and slices and slices of present. There's the moment, the next moment, the next moment, and that's what we're connected to, that's what we're linking into right now. That's our da'at, that's our normal awake da'at consciousness. We are only aware of the moment in front of us. Human da'at is designed to be caught up in the moment. In this world. This world, which we refer to as... Not your question? Olam Hazeh. She needs you to come. It took a lot longer before. Now we got you. We're good. Now we're going to go. Olam Hazeh. That's an Olam Hazeh consciousness. That's a this worldly consciousness. When we leave Olam Hazeh, we go to, first of the obvious one, Olam Haba. Another way of describing Olam Haba is also, anybody familiar with other terms that are used for Olam Haba?
Olam
HaNeshamot. Olam HaNeshamot, excellent. Keep going. Gan Eden, good. Many sources also refer to it as... Excellent. Is that it? Olam Hamet. Olam Hamet. The world of truth. where the ultimate truth is finally revealed, where everything is clear, Olam Ha'emet. Indicating, by the way, that the parallel in Olam Hazeh, that this is Ed, which the source is also referred to, Olam Ha'Sheker, the world that we live in, the reality of Olam Hazeh is in the term that's used as an Alma de Shikra, an Olam Ha'Sheker. The two are contrasted with each other that way. Now, if Olam Haba is Olam Ha'Emet, there are many beautiful, unique aspects of the word Emet. One of them is that when you look at the letters of the word Emet, that Emet is comprised of the first, center, and last letter of the Aleph Beit. The beginning, the middle, and the end. In fact, the Gemara says in... Did I put in the source sheet? Yes. The Gemara says in Masechet Shabbat, I believe also in other places possibly, but certainly the Gemara in Masechet Shabbat, in source number 4, Chotamo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Emet. The signature of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Emet. That's relating to the deeper truth, this closer connection to what reality really is this reality of Emet. To the extent that a system is taking things from the beginning to the middle and all the way until the end, that's when something is emet. Right? I mean, that's the nature of truth. Truth has to not just be truth in the present. Truth has to be true in terms of its origins. It has to be true now and it has to remain true. That's ultimate truth. The signature of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who exists in a reality where past, present, and future are experienced simultaneously, the signature of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be Emet. The name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that brings this out, which name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings out this aspect? The most prominent name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the most source or root name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Yudkei Vavkei. Yudkei Vavkei, which is... We use the Baruch Benati, but Yudkei Vavkei is bringing out the letters of Avar for Haina, Oved, and Yihyeh. It's the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that shows that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is beyond all of the limitations of time and space. All the limitations that are imposed by the dimensions of this world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is that which is supernal. He is beyond. Haya hove v'yeh. He transcends that limited consciousness that we have. One of the reasons why we don't pronounce the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is because, the name of Yud Kei Vav Kei, is because we have no connection to that. As Da'at-oriented beings who are focused singularly on the present, as we stand here, if we're davening or saying a bracha, we don't have access beyond the realms of space and time. We have no access to Hayah Leviyah, and therefore we have no way of saying the word. That's why we don't actually pronounce Hayah Leviyah. We don't pronounce the name Yud Kei Vav Kei. And again, this is a name, Yud Kei Vav Kei, that's connected to Emet. How so? Am I jumping ahead? I don't think so. Yes, I am jumping ahead. We'll come back to that in a second. We'll come back to that in a second. When we get to Olam HaEmet, after 120, when a person moves on to Olam HaEmet, it's not that a person moves on to a totally different place and is shown this, you know, the image that's often described, is shown a video of their entire life from beginning to end, and they have to experience it and understand, but it's not that they're shown a video of their life from beginning to end. When a person moves on to Olam HaEmet, what Olam HaEmet means is that they're experiencing the totality of their life all at the same time right now. It's a conscious beyond the limitations of normal daily da'at. I'm moving into a whole different realm where I'm experiencing the totality of my life all at the same time. I'm experiencing past, present, and future simultaneously. It transcends the limitations of Olam Hazeh. My Rebbe suggests that this concept that everything that we have in this world, that we do in this world, stays with us and comes along with us to Olam HaEmet. He goes to, the studies have come under scrutiny, but he turns to an individual by the name of Penfield, who did experiments. He was a neurosurgeon who did brain surgery, and in the context of brain surgery, he would do, he would simulate parts of the brain with electrodes and ignite parts of the brain that were normally shut down. And when asking the person what they experienced in that moment, they wouldn't say that by simulating the brain, they remembered past tense things that had happened to them. They would describe the experience that they were in that moment living the experiences that they had had before, that their past was actually present for them. Implying that everything that we experience, everything that we go through in life, everything that we see, everything that we hear, everything that we touch, everything that comes into our consciousness, it literally gets imprinted on our brain and it stays with us. It becomes part of who we are. Not just metaphorically in the sense of it becomes part of what forges us into the person that we are. But every experience that we have gets recorded by our brain, by our consciousness, and it stays with us for all eternity. Based on this, my Rebbe suggests, as a possibility, that when the Mishnah Pirkei Avot says, in the end of source number 5, the chol ma'asecha ba'sefer nichtavin, every one of our actions is recorded in the book. He suggests that it's possible that the book is our minds. That every single thing that happens to us gets recorded in our minds and stays literally with us forever. So while we may be only... during our regular conscious and Olam HaZeh, we may only remember the past. We don't experience it. Every single thing that happens to us becomes part of who we are in a way that when we then move on to Olam HaEmet, we experience all of that simultaneously. We have access to all of that in the same moment, which is a powerful thought in and of itself. In terms of thinking about what we see and what we listen to and what we interact with, the fact that every single thing that we take into our bodies, that we make part of our active conscious experience in this world, literally becomes a part of us forever. It's a very, very, very powerful concept. You had a question? Somebody had a question? No? Okay. Now, imagine that there's someone in Olam HaZeh who has completely acquired the midah of emet. They truly live emet, even though this is an olam hasheker. They acquire the midah of emet, they live emet completely, even in olam hazeh. What would that imply? That one can already have the perception of olam haba, already have the perception of olam ha'emet, even in olam hazeh. And therefore the transition from olam hazeh to olam haba for this person is no transition at all. If they're already living emet in olam hazeh, then the move from this world to olam ha'emet isn't really even a transition for them at all. Which individual is the embodiment of emet? Loud? Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov is the midah of emet. Take a look in source number 6, one example of this, where it says, Titen emet liyaakov. Emet belongs to Yaakov. It's a defining characteristic. Now you'll say, well, maybe it's just talking about one of his aspects. Look at the next words. Titen emet liyaakov. What are the next words? Chesed l'Abraham. Meaning, just as strong as chesed is correlated to Abraham, as we know it's his very being, so too is emet correlated with Yaakov. It's his very being. Right? Let's put that back on the board. The chart that we were using for a while. We will just put the upper three of the midot. We have chesed, Yivura, and Tiferet. Right? The three most primary spheroids. Who is correlated with chesed? Abraham. Vura? And Teferet? So a couple of interesting things about the meat of Tiferet. Tiferet has so many different facets to it. One of them is that Tiferet is often referred to as the meat of Emet. That is the meat of Yaakov Avinu. Not only that, but each one of the midot has a name of a Kadosh Baruch Hu that is associated with it, that is most closely linked with it. Anybody know the names of a Kadosh Baruch Hu that are correlated with these three midot? The midot that's the name of a Kadosh Baruch Hu that's correlated with Chesed. Not Elohim, good. Elohim is Gvura, right? Elohim, Yitzchak, we said, is more din oriented, more Gvura or din oriented, and Elohim in Hebrew is a judge in Tanakh, and Elohim is a judge. Din, Gvura, Yitzchak is related to Elohim. What about Chesed? No, that's later on, but you're half right. Is the name Kael. What does Kael literally mean? Anybody familiar? What does Kael literally mean? It literally means a power or a force. We talked about how Chesed is going beyond your boundaries. Chesed is when HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes. When the name Kael means when HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes, and he forcibly takes care of everything for you from him. There's no effort on our part. That's Kael. That's the strength of HaKadosh Baruch Hu coming in. That's just because we're running out of time here. Chesed, which is the midah that's associated also with Pesach, right? Avraham and Chesed are associated with Pesach. We don't do anything, we barely do anything to deserve to be taken out of Mitzrayim. Kadosh Baruch Hu b'cholu v'atzmo comes and takes us out. He puts his hand like an animal giving birth to a child. Kadosh Baruch Hu, like the farmer comes and puts his hand to the womb of the animal to pull out the child. A Kadosh Baruch Hu does it all on his own. That's Kael, that's Avraham, that's Chesed. And Elohim is correlated with Gvura. And what's correlated with Tiferet? Bring it all full circle. Yaakov Vino is the Midah of Emet, and he is correlated with the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which relates to Emet. Emet being true from Aleph to Mem to Taf, true from beginning to end, Hayav Aviyeh, the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that expresses that, it's all linked to Yaakov Vino. Yaakov Avinu, who is living this reality in Olam Hazeh, the embodiment of Emet, and therefore, coming back to a Gemara that we've quoted a few times already, Yaakov Avinu is Lo Meit. Remember we talked about the Gemara before? It's on your source sheets. Source number 7. Hachi Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Yaakov Avinu Lo Meit. It's another floor, another layer of this Gemara that we keep coming back to, and we're going to keep coming back to. He's Lo Meit. Because he doesn't, because death isn't meaningful in that context. Because he's living Emet in Olam Hazeh. Therefore, there is no reality of a transition to Olam HaEmet. He is already living Emet. He doesn't go through that process of Meit. By the way, interesting. Meit is in the word Emet. What is Meit? When you cut off from the Aleph, when you cut off from the source of all things, there's no life. When you cut off from the source of life, you have Meit. In the same way, that if you cut off from the top, you're left with Im, which is a question mark. You don't know where things are headed. You don't know where the destination point is. Because again, Emet is true from the beginning to the middle to the end. That's what Yaakov is. He's living in a reality of Hayah, Hoveh, V'yeh. He's living in a reality of Emet. He's already living Olam Emet, even in Olam Hazeh. Coming back to our topic. Bring it back to dreams. The more narrow our perspective of reality is, the more we're focused only on the thin slice of the present that we're experiencing, the more narrow our perspective of time is, the more sheker-oriented our perspective will be. We're more and more removed from that broad and encompassing perspective of Emet. And it's something that we experience. Even just think about the way that we frame these Chumash Shirim. What's the bumper sticker of the Midrashah?
Narrative.
Narrative, thank you. That should have been on everybody's without question. We have very limited time to get that down. We've only got a few sure length, right? Narrative is our bumper sticker of the Meter Shah. It's one of the reasons why I'm so desperate to bring back the concept of narrative to Chumash. You see, people who are so confused as to what Torah is, because every shir gives them one thin slice without seeing its context, and therefore it becomes sheker oriented. It becomes twisted and distorted. Because there's nothing beyond the possible message that may be emet, may be sheker, depends on whose Dvar Torah you're listening to, of the way that they manage to draw out something from that letter or from that word or from that pasuk without any context beyond that. Think about the problems that there are in the one of the major topics today is without getting into the whole discussion of it, because it's definitely appropriate to the discussion, but it's not where we're going to go for the rest of Shir. In terms of what is the news? And what is real news and what is fake news? And one of the biggest problems with news is what do we want from our news? What news outlet is the best news outlet that gets you the information instantaneously? We're not fact-checking. That takes time. We're not speaking to witnesses. That takes time. We're not double-checking. That takes time. And then somebody else breaks the story first. They get the credit and we're behind. And in the rush of the mode of instant gratification that we live in, one of the many reasons why truth is being distorted is because if the only way to get clicks and to get likes and to get watched is if you break the story first, you're only living in the thin slice of the moment, which means that moment lacks all context. And then you have a lot of opportunity for a lot of sheker to come up. It's one of the many reasons, but one of the many reasons. Same thing, you think about what we talk about this all the time. In all, not just in our shirim, in all shirim, that when a person is focused on the thin slice of the moment, if all I care about is this moment right now, what do we call that? We just used the phrase a second ago, when I only care about this moment right now. That's all I'm focused on. What is this moment giving to me? How is this moment relating to me? Instant gratification. Instant gratification is a byproduct of totally cutting off from my past and my future. In that moment, give a less charged example, right? I'm sitting there in front of that cheeseburger. So I have two options. I can be lost in the thin slice of the moment, which is more sheker oriented, and I know two pieces of information. I'm hungry, it smells great. That's it. I'm cutting off from everything that I've learned about Torah and Judaism and everything that I know is important in the world. I've cut off entirely from whether I care about my health and Olam HaBa or not. I only care about two things. Hungry, delicious, the end. That's sheker. The more I'm put into the thin slice of the moment, the more I'm only dot-oriented in a way where I'm just living that thin slice of the moment, the more sheker-oriented I am. The more instant gratification-focused I am. The more that I have no context for what's happening around me. On the flip side, the broader one's perspective is, the more a person lives every moment of his or her life in the present, in the complete context, and with anticipation, in the complete context, and knowing the past, complete context of the past, and complete anticipation of the future, that is a person who is living a life of emet. A person who knows everything of where they came from, draws from that well of experience, that well of their life, the well of Torah and Masorah that draws them all the way back, and thinking about exactly where this is taking me, that's a person who's living who's broad-minded and living in a reality of emet. So, we said that death is what allows us to enter into Olam HaEmet, into that reality that is beyond, where past, present, and future all experience simultaneously. And yet, where in our lives do we have a small experience of death itself?
Sleep.
Now it should all come together. Sleep is when we experience a little bit of death. As the Gemara says, source number 8, Sheina, sleep, echad mishishim lamita. Sleep is 1/60th of death. What does 1/60th mean? Why is that significant? Where does it often come up? Kashrut, right? It's the most physical, practical example. So let's use that as the example. Why does it matter if there is less than 60 times the amount of that thing? Then what? If there's less than 60 amount, then it is significant, right? Meaning, it's the borderline where I can taste it, or the borderline of where I can actually experience something, is at the level of 1/60. It's the smallest amount where I still have a connection to it, I still can experience it. I still taste it. Or in this case, it's the smallest amount of death where I can still experience a little bit of what that means. And sleep is 1/60th of death. When a person sleeps, their neshama disconnects from the body a little bit and gives the possibility to experience a reality outside of the confines of Olam HaSheker, outside of the confines of the narrow moment of time. How do we say a dream in Hebrew? Chalom. Anybody know what nikud, what Hebrew punctuation chalom is related to? V'cholam. Anybody hear v'cholam? Okay. A chalam is when you have a word, right? And like Anochi, where is the Vav? It's not there. How do you get the O sound of Anochi? The Cholam is the Nikud that sits over there, that sits on top of the letter, that creates an O sound. What is a Cholam? A Cholam is the Nikud that sits, it sits above, it hovers over the word. It looks at the word from above, that's why it's called a Cholam. One of the expressions of the fact that what a chalom is to be able to see things from its broader perspective, to view things from beyond. It's a meta perspective on life. And Chazal tell us. No, you got to go fast. So you go fast, go fast. This is the key. This is the piece. Then the stuff at the end is amazing. But this just puts everything together. We'll jump to it now because I don't want to miss it. Is that Chazal tell us that what we experience during the day determines what we dream at night. What we experience during the day can determine an impact. Determines and impacts what we dream at night. It's contingent one upon the other. Yes. No. Therefore, why would the tzaddik be a dreamer but the Baal Tshuva not be a dreamer? The tzaddik is a dreamer because the tzaddik is only engaged in reality in things that are pure, in things that are good. We talked about that. The tzaddik doesn't make the mistake. The tzaddik doesn't give in to the time. The tzaddik doesn't give in to the moment. And so therefore the tzaddik is comfortable, it's safe for the tzaddik to dream, to enter into a realm of consciousness where they're experiencing themselves from a perspective of Hayah Vaviyah, because they're coming to it from a place of purity. They're experiencing the purity of the totality of their existence. And on the flip side, the Baal Tshuva won't dream. David HaMelech doesn't dream. Why does the Baal Tshuva not dream? Because even though we talked about how Tshuva can reframe the sin that happened in the past, it can even change zdonot to zchuyot. That still, as we talked before, the experience, the actual chet itself, the act of that happening is still imprinted on their brain, it's imprinted on their mind, it's imprinted into their being. And if they enter into a reality of 1/60th of death, if they enter into that reality, then that comes to the fore again. And so the Baal Tshuva stays away from dreaming. Yosef is the dreamer. Yosef the tzaddik is the dreamer. experiencing 1/60th of Olam HaEmet when he dreams, experiencing, seeing those dreams and understanding them and connecting to them, because he's relating to that reality of Emet. The Baal Teshuva doesn't dream because the experiences they had are things they don't want to be able to come back to before, to muddy those waters. And so they stay away from that reality of dreaming. A Baal Teshuva, as my Rebbe put it, can't allow himself to sleep or to dream, so to speak. An amazing way that my Rebbe sort of took this all home, took us even one step further. We talked about these two lines of Malchuyot. Eventually, when the kingdom splits, after Shlomo HaMelech, we get two kingdoms. We have Malchut. After Shlomo HaMelech, when the kingdom split, we have... not the king specifically, the overarching Malchuyot. We have the Malchut of Yehuda, and the Malchut is often referred to as Yisrael. Right? We have Malchut Yehuda, and Malchut Yisrael. But for those who are familiar with Tanakh, Malchut Yisrael is often referred to as the Malchut of who? It's not ever going to be Yosef, because he gets divided into two tribes. Ephraim. Take a look. It's a good book. Nach. Right? Take a look through Tanakh, you'll find that Malchut Yisrael is often referred to as the Malchut of Ephraim. Because Ephraim is coming from Yosef. He's the most prominent, he's the more prominent son of Yosef. And it's his line of kingship. When does that come to an end? So you said when it started off. When it comes to an end is at Sancheirev and Ashur. At that time, it leads to the exile of the 10 tribes. And after the 10 tribes are exiled, how are we referred to for the rest of time? We become Yehudim. Because all that's left is Yehuda. Because the rest of Yisrael is exiled. We become primarily Yehudim. We're still B'nai Yisrael, we're still Klal Yisrael, but when we use those terms, we usually use them in Shirim in reference to Klal Yisrael in the desert, or B'nai Yisrael in the times of Tanakh. Right? But Yehudim becomes the prominent term for how we're addressed, because we literally are all from Yehuda. Exceptions of Kohen and Levi. We're primarily from Yehuda. That happens at Korban Bayit Rishon. What is one of the most significant things that changes after Korban Bayit Rishon? What do we lose? Say louder. We lose Nivuah. Why would we lose Nivuah at the same time that we lose the line of Malchus of Yosef, embodied in Malchut Ephraim and Malchut Yisrael? Because if you look at the second half of the Gemara in source number 8, a chalom is echad mishishim l'nivuah. Dreams and nivuah themselves are intrinsically linked. A dream is 1/60th of nivuah. Nivuah is an experience that's related to dreams, to entering into a state that's beyond. So when the line of Malchut of the dreamer goes away, we also lose prophecy, we lose Nevuah at the same time as well. Beautiful insight of the Rebbe into this. As long as we're Yisrael, prophecy is within us. But as soon as we become Yehudim, we lose prophecy. We lose dreams and prophecy when we switch to the reality of Yehuda. All of this is to emphasize, first of all, to understand why Yosef is so much more deeply linked with dreams, so it's so much a part of him, why he is the Baal HaChalamot, why he is the dreamer, why this is his way of relating to reality, and how he's able, when he sees these dreams, he sees the dreams of in the beginning of his life, and he knows that everybody's going to bow down to him. What is he relating to when he says that everybody's going to bow down to him? The future, right? He's seeing beyond. When he sees, he hears the dreams of the cupbearer and the baker, what is he relating to again when he interprets the dreams? The future. When he hears the dreams of Paro, is able to interpret the dreams of Paro, what is he relating to? the future again, right? He's relating to the future. Meaning he has a clarity of past, present, and future. He's able to experience and interpret his own dreams and interpret the dreams of others because he has that clarity of understanding. That he's living that reality of Emet. He's reliving, he is that Baal HaChalot, he is that Tzaddik. And he's able to enter with clarity into those realms that go beyond the narrow slice of time. And while there are tremendous ma'alot to the Baal Tshuva, and we talked last time about some of the many, many ma'alot of the Baal Tshuva, and about how it's the ultimate line of kingship that will take us to the end of days, and that it's Shlomo HaMelech who builds by Rishon, and it's Malchut Bein David who's going to build by Shlishi from here Rabbi Yameinu. That's what's inevitably going to happen. At the same time, there are tremendous ma'alot to the tzaddik, who has an entirely different experience of reality. Connection to reality in Olam Hazeh, and drawing from a reality that comes even from beyond that, from Olam HaAmet, from Olam Haba. Bezrat Hashem, we should be zocha to experience a reality of tikkut in our own lives, to have a clarity of vision, to have a clarity of truth in the lives that we live, to go beyond, despite our da'at, to go beyond the narrow slice of the moment, and to expand that da'at, to be linked and connected to past, present, and future, to be deeply linked to our past and draw it forth into that moment, to be deeply linked into where we're headed and draw it into that moment with that broadness of perspective, that we live a reality of truth, and through that hopefully pave the way to the malchut of the Baal Tshuva as well, to the malchut of David, to see that third Beit HaMikdash built. Here I'll be Aminu. Shkoach, everybody. We'll continue on Monday.